you guys have done this before.
We have Amelia Clark. Alan Taylor. Next, Dana Goldberg. And finally, David Ellison.
I know.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to start with questions.
Well, my question is for Arnold. They actually call me Franchise Fred because I believe there should always be more sequels to everything. Do you agree that there's always more story to tell in a sequel?
Well, first of all, when I looked at you, I said to myself, this question has to be for me. Because the first question comes right away from the most pumped up guy in the room.
Exactly.
Look at this.
He's jacked.
And I bet you any money that he put on a little bit of baby oil also, just to make the forms, to make the forms pop a little bit. Good to see you. I think that it really depends so much on the writing. I think there's some people that are capable of making a sequel more special than the original, and we have seen that when the original Terminator came out, then Jim Cameron outdid himself with the sequel, and so then became the highest grossing movie of the year when it came out in 1991 or whatever it was, and since then we've been trying to outdo that, not always successfully, but that's what was always the attempt. And so this time I think Alan Taylor and the writers and the producers have done an extraordinary job to really live up to that standard of Terminator 2 again.
Mr. Schwarzenegger, one of the great things about this movie is how we get to see different versions of your character. How has your approach to the character changed over all these years, especially since in the first one it started off kind of like a sci-fi horror movie?
Well, in Terminator 1, it was very clear that it was there just a machine that destroys human beings, and anything that was in my way, I would wipe out in the most brutal way without any feelings or any kind of remorse. And because my mission was to protect the machines and to find Sarah Connor and to basically be successful with my mission. In this movie, it becomes a little bit more colorful because now I am again back to destroy Sarah Connor. I'm still this vicious, cold machine that is programmed to destroy Sarah Connor, and nothing will get in my way, except in this story something does get in my way, which is another Terminator, one that has been around for a longer period of time. It's also the T-800 model, but he was programmed to protect Sarah Connor and the human race. So there's obviously a major conflict there between the two when they meet, and that's what creates then this huge epic battle. Then, of course, the Terminators, depending on how long they've been around, some of them are just straight Terminator, as the one from 1984, but then the one that has been around longer has already adopted certain human behaviors. Subtle. And so from an acting point of view, you have to really be very wise the way you use that and how you get that across, that he has certain human behaviors and he does have certain feelings and stuff like that, but also it creates great comic relief when the Terminator tries very hard to be like a human and he fails miserably. So you see also that in the movie.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate all of you. I think it's very safe to say the Terminator is back. job well done, all. My question goes out to Lena, to Patrick, and to Alan. You really open up the temporal nexus with this film, and you can go anywhere and do anything. What kind of challenges and advantages does that present for you as screenwriters, and then for you, Alan, as a director, when you are putting the visual tone to what's on the page?
Well, I'd start with one huge advantage, because this is a very important thing to me, I think to us, which is that if you are looking at it as a temporal nexus, which is branching out into alternative timelines, nothing that's in canon is changed. Those other timelines are preserved and they remain. We're on an alternate universe timeline, so we are not negating anything that came before us. We are hopefully just adding to it and creating a, you know, an AU, another storyline with the same core characters. And probably the biggest single advantage of that is that you're not asking the audience to put aside anything they've seen before. You're asking them to incorporate it and imagine, okay, well, here are characters that you know and love. What if you saw them in a different situation? What about them is at their core that wouldn't change? What about them would if their environment was different? If you put a machine, and in some ways we're sort of expanding on the idea of the learning chip, which ironically everybody knows about, even though it was the scene itself was cut out of the second movie, but everyone knows about it, even though we didn't talk about it in this film. You take a T-800 model with his learning chip turned on and you put him there. And he's in the middle of humans for decades. And he's going to change. And that's very much an exploration of something that I think always wanted to see done from the first two movies, because it's very much teased in the second film. And you never got to go there. A lot of this is about that. What do you love about the franchise? What can you take forward and do more with that we just never got a chance to see?
Yeah, obviously it's a wonderful storytelling device, because you can open up a new universe, a new world. And it's... besides offering twists and new territory, it's also thematically grounded, like you just said. The central question of these movies is, you know, what does it mean to be human? Are we the authors of our own fate, or is our fate thrust upon us? So if you take the same personality, like you said, and change the terms, you see a different parallel life they could have led. This is a way of sort of highlighting that they are writing their own fate, literally. It's also really challenging, though, because once you do this, you get a tremendous amount of complexity comes roaring in. I think we have 7 time frames that we touch upon in this movie, if you count flashbacks. So getting across to the audience why you're doing it, why you're allowed to do it, and what the limitations and what the rules are is a tricky thing. I'm very glad you used the word nexus so effortlessly. it's not an easy word to throw around. One of my favorite moments in the movie is when Arnold uses the word, and Kyle's reaction to it is about what the audience's reaction to it is. So trying to get that across so it doesn't bog the story down, but just unleashes the story is one of the challenges.
Good morning. How helpful was Mr. Schwarzenegger with the weaponry and stunt work involved in the movie?
He was very helpful. I definitely needed a lot of help. So he was very helpful. I know that I spent most of my training just hoping that that he would be impressed. Getting a good response from him was kind of the most helpful thing to give me the confidence to continue on.
He's the only man I've ever come across who can fire six shotgun shells off without blinking. Yeah. It's really hard to achieve.
Right here. I have 2 questions in one for Arnold. If you could really go back in time to 1984, what would you like to relive over and over again, and what would you like to change before it happens?
Well, I don't know if I would be that interested in 1984. I think that if I have a chance to go back, why not just go back all the way in history and, you know, to the times of the pyramids or to the Roman days? I think there's so many great historic times throughout now, until now, that I would like to get a little peek of those periods, rather than just 1984. Why limit yourself? If I have the chance to time travel, might as well go all out. What's your second question?
No, it's to change if there's anything in your past that you would like to change before it happens.
I'm perfectly fine with my life. I'm very happy. I want to keep it that way.
Playing off of an earlier question for Amelia and Jai, doing the stunt work naked, was that a little more freeing? And did Governor Schwarzenegger show you?
Freeing, yeah, no, that's the word. It's totally liberating doing stunts naked.
Yeah, definitely. Naked in a harness was fun. Doing stunts, that was good. That was interesting.
I don't know, Arnold, did we get into naked talk? We can now. Well, I think they're fun.
Yeah, look.
Because they're embarrassing, they're fun, and it leads to funny conversations and funny dialogue and great humor and everything like that. So, you know, it's inevitable. You have to do it because that's what the movie shows. And there's at certain times you can cover things up, and at certain times you don't, and you can't. So what? You know, I don't think there's anyone here that had anything to hide.
Well, didn't have a choice.
I had a few things I tried to hide.
You shoot it carefully. We had a wonderful AD named Phil Patterson who would always get half naked whenever there was a nude scene.
Yeah, that's very supportive. Uncle
so
Phil.
Wandering around looking beautiful, and then there was Phil not looking quite so beautiful. Team player.
Solidarity.
To the governor, I wanted to ask you, first of all, what was it like when you saw yourself fighting yourself, your younger self, on screen? And secondly, do you have any comment on the Supreme Court ruling today on gay marriage?
Well, first of all, I think that the bodybuilder that they picked for me to fight with was really an extraordinary kind of a champion bodybuilder. He had terrific muscles and so that was a great idea to use that approach. But after 3-4 days of doing this fight scene and being thrown around and doing all the crazy stunts and this epic battle, I was always wondering while I was doing it, you know, how are you going to do this face replacement? How are you going to do this technologically kind of head replacement? And how do you make the body exactly like my body is? Because his body was extraordinary, but it was not exactly like my body was, right? So everybody's different. So, you know, I was always in my mind was that. I mean, how is this going to work out? And so I really never knew. The entire movie, there was various different fight scenes with John Connor and with others that were just huge battle scenes, but I mean, I was kind of not clear how this is going to, you know, work with the visual effects. And then when I saw it just 3 weeks ago, the finished movie for the first time, because I made it very clear I don't want to see it when just going through stages. I want to see it when it's finished so we can really see how it works. And so I looked very carefully at the technical aspect when I watched it the first time. And then after that, I watched it a few more times just then to, you know, because from another point of view, how does the story work? And so, but I looked at the technical stuff and I just thought it was so seamless. And the technology has advanced so much that it was really extraordinary to get this kind of entertainment and storytelling that you can do that today. Because in the old days, you had to do kind of, you know, split screens and all kinds of things. And you could tell that it was not the same. You know, it was not like two Arnolds fighting, two Terminators fighting at different ages and stuff like that. But this in this movie, it totally worked. And so I was really impressed. And I thought it was smart that from a scheduling point of view, they did that scene pretty much on the beginning of the movie, because I did not realize that it would take 1 year of a bunch of, and maybe the producers, you guys can answer, how many people worked on that scene for 1 year from the time we shot it all the way to the end, because it barely got finished on time.
Yeah, it was hundreds of visual effects artists, and the entire team at NBC, and you know, our hats are really off to our visual effects supervisor, Yannick Sears and Sherry Hansen. Creating a walking, living, breathing synthespian has always been a holy grail to achieve in visual effects, and we absolutely think they've achieved it for the first time in this movie. And to give anybody an idea of how down to the wire it was, we had to finish the movie at midnight in color correction to deliver the film on time, and we got the last two shots at 11:30 and finished at 12:03 a.m.
Wow. So, I mean, that is really amazing when you think about that. 1 year, you know, that many people working on it, but with the technology that is available now, the CGI and all this, it can be done. You know, you have to have the money for it, obviously, and you have to have the time and really base yourself and do the prepping in such a way that you start early enough with the scene so that you do have the time so you can finish the scenes. So that was the extraordinary thing. And then, and when it comes to the Supreme Court, I'm very happy that they made the right decision on that. Because we in California, of course, we're always a step ahead. We made that decision already a long time ago. Our Supreme Court of California, that is unconstitutional to deny people that, you know, gay or same-sex couples, the marriage, everyone has equal rights. So this is the right way to go, and I think it's a great celebration for America. So sometimes I have to say that the judges and our judiciary system makes better decisions than the politicians. Sadly, that they are not really having the balls sometimes to lead and work together on those issues.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were such a lovely choice as Sarah Connor.
Thank you.
Hallelujah.
Were you intimidated to step into Linda Hamilton's shoes? How aware were you of her performance going into this? And did your work on Game of Thrones help you in any way with this role?
Yes to all of your questions. Yes, I was. I'd grown up watching The Terminators and being continually inspired by, especially by Linda's incredible performance. So I jumped at the chance to be able to take on this role. And then it was kind of after that fact that the daunting realization of the enormity of the part kind of sunk in. But yes, it's just been an absolute joy as an actor to be able to take this on. And yeah, there are many elements of my work in Game of Thrones that were incredibly helpful to try and kind of harness the like inner badass. But the difference between the two is that in Game of Thrones, I do a lot of delegating, and then here in this movie, I really had to get down and dirty and like do a lot of the stunts and the gun work and everything. So yeah, it's similarities, but Sarah Connor is a whole other kind of badass.
Thank you.
Hi, my question is for Arnold Schwarzenegger. I have two questions. As one is, your character T-800 aged in this film. It's very interesting point of view. How about yourself? What you thought about aged? And the other question is, your character is machine, but how about yourself, the relationship with machines, technologies?
Well, first of all, I thought that, again, the writers came up with really a great way of in an organic way to show the aging of Terminator. And because Terminator cannot go and do the time travel at a certain point because his hand is exposed, the flesh is gone, the metal is exposed, and therefore you cannot time travel, whereas the others can. So all the other characters time traveling within seconds, they're there in the future, and I have to go the old-fashioned way. I have to go the slow way. So I age, of course, decades as times go on, from 1984 to 2017, and my hair turns gray and I age and stuff like that. And so this was a wonderful way of explaining, how the Terminator ages, how the flesh ages, the human flesh, but the skeleton underneath is still the same, functions the same, it's the same size and everything like this. As a matter of fact, Alan asked me to gain 10 pounds in order to have the same size as the skeleton always had in 1984, so I gained that weight, trained twice as hard, trained heavier and stuff like that, to get more muscle size and so on, to keep that same frame and wear the same kind of size clothing and all this stuff. But other than that, I aged. So I thought that concept and the way it was written was really terrific, because this way we don't pretend that I'm kind of the 40-year-old guy, but I am what I am, which is I have aged. And so that worked really well. I myself don't feel any older, so I think because I've stayed in shape and I exercise every day. So when I started the movie, I did the prepping 2 months before. I worked with the stunt coordinators, I worked with the director and with the special effects people and with everybody. And we exercised and trained for it so that we could do the movie and do all the stunts that were necessary. And then whenever there were stunts that were dangerous, then the stunt people took over and then did the stunts, for me. So that's the way it worked. And I was delighted to be able to do the movie without getting exhausted or feeling old or tired or anything like this. I felt I was in great shape and I felt really young. Say again. I embrace technology, and I just think that in 1984, when James Cameron wrote about the technology, everyone thought it was totally way out there and it was science fiction. But now, we have now become we got the time where it is almost reality of what he talked about. I mean, it's like the machines have taken over, except that they have not become self-aware like in Terminator. So this is really one thing that we have to watch out for. But I think technology is good. It can be abused as everything else, but I think it is good, and I hope that we will continue getting smarter and getting more interesting intelligence. And, you know, we are going in the direction of artificial intelligence or hybrid intelligence, where a part of our brain will get from the cloud the information and the other half is from you. So all of this stuff will happen in the future.
Not self-aware yet.
Exactly.
This one's for the writers. How do you guys find the balance of quoting some of the quotes, you know, the iconic quotes from the first movie and the intersecting scenes versus also pushing forward and sort of creating a new narrative here?
I think it was a combination when, you know, when we started the process. The first scene that we came up with was actually the scene where Arnold fights Arnold, was, and everything sort of branched out from that forward and back. We knew we wanted these core group of characters. We wanted Sarah Connor, we wanted Kyle Reese, we wanted John Connor, and how they were gonna build. We wanted to, you know, the moment that you've seen in the trailer is the I'll be back moment. We knew we wanted that, but we knew we didn't want it early in the film. You know, knew if we were gonna use it, we had to earn it and make it so that it had a real significance and an emotional significance. So everything was, you know, a massive love letter to what James Cameron created, and so out of that was just trying to find the balance of where to slide it in. A lot of it was you felt it, you just felt your way through it. And whenever we sort of felt wrong, the actors and the producers and everybody would lean up, and you know, we would made a point of not overdoing it.
Hi, this is Cornelia. Just continuing on, I mean, the legacy of Sarah Connor is so huge. Mm-hmm. What was really important to you, though, in bringing that character to life and your take? And also, did Lena offer you any advice?
Well, I think some of the most important things to me in reprising this role is that it was such a daunting thing to be taking on. My kind of ego probably jumped at the chance to play it, and then the realization kind of crept in. But then getting to read our gorgeous script, the Sarah that we see in this movie is so different. The spirit is definitely still intact, and I really hope that scene that you can see the essence of the Linda Hamilton, what Linda Hamilton created with Sarah Connor, is there. But having such a different upbringing, having such a different childhood, really the result is a girl who is ahead of the game from when we saw Sarah Connor at this age last. She's there to save this guy as opposed to the other way around. So there's a lot of kind of really wonderful differences. And so that's what was important to me, to kind of show the history of what Sarah's been through whilst maintaining the spirit of what we kind of created. No, sadly, I didn't speak to her, but I can only hope that she was happy with what I managed to make of this.
For Governor Schwarzenegger, can you take us back to the moment when you first became involved in the Terminator franchise, that you'd established yourself with Conan, and this was the thing that really made you a true international superstar? Can you talk about your feelings before anybody knew what Terminator was, what you were thinking coming into the role, and what it's come to mean to you over the years?
Yeah, I was approached to play Kyle Reese by Mike Medavoy. He said, we have this great project with Hamdell and Orion, and it's a, you know, kind of an action flick, kind of low budget. James Cameron, you probably have not heard of him, but he has done one movie before, some little movie. So this is his second movie, as far as we are concerned, that O.J. Simpson is going to play Terminator, and so this was kind of the dialogue. And I said, "Well, that's great." I said, "Let me get the script," and I got the script. I read it, and it was a really great script. And then I met with James Cameron, and during the lunch period with him and with John Daly, I started talking more and more about Terminator, and how he has to train, and how he has to prepare for this part, and how he has to act like a machine, and how he has to disassemble and put together guns blindfolded, and how he has to practice shooting and he shouldn't blink, and on and on and on. So the whole lunch went like that. And then on the end, James Cameron said, "So why are you wanting to play Reese? You should be the Terminator." And I said, no. I said, okay, the Terminator only has 27 lines. I don't want to go back with my career here. You know, I like Kyle Reese. I mean, he really says a lot, and he's the hero, you know. And I just started out being kind of like the leading man and being the hero in the Conan movie. So I want to continue on like that. And he says, no, but the most memorable character really will be the Terminator. The way I shoot it is this way, and this way. He was explaining the whole thing, and he says, you should be the Terminator, and I will make sure that you don't have to think about the villain's aspect, because it's a machine. So everyone is going to think he's a hero anyway, because he's going to do cool things. And so you know, he talked me into it, basically. So I said, all right, forget about the calories, I'm going to be the Terminator. And so that's how that happened. And so it was, you know, a small project with Angel Hurt being the producer, and we went out and shot it in kind of 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and really the cheap way. And Stan Winston was helping us, you know, with the special effects and visual effects and all this. And it ended up, you know, this what was supposed to be kind of a little B movie ended up of one of the 10 top movies for Time Magazine. And, you know, and I was called, you know, the ultimate villain, and then at the same time the ultimate hero, and all of this kind of, so all this great stuff started happening, which no one of us knew would happen. So this was all kind of like exploding. And then there was a demand for a second one, and then we did the second one, and that became the highest grossing movie of the year in 1991, I think it was, or 1992, I forgot now. But I mean, in any case, so that was really the launch of this franchise, and of the, you know, it became bigger, bigger, and bigger.
We have time for our last question back there. Oh, you got it. Hi. Yeah, for Amelia and for this is a bit of a reunion for the both of you, working on Game of Thrones, and I'm curious, how did your relationship there sort of inform working on this movie, which, as Amelia noted, is a very different role for you?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know.
Let's
do you
talk,
know?
Talk
Let's
it over and get
exactly,
back to
exactly.
I think I went through a kind of a learning curve on this, because I think going into it, I thought it would be an easy transition. It would be sort of a seamless transition. She was this powerful warrior goddess who we knew could accomplish
be fireproof.
Fireproof, be naked.
Yeah, visible that.
And it wasn't until we started doing the work, I started, you know, delving into this very specific script, that I started to realize just how different the demands work on her. And you really can't underestimate the transformation she had to go through. You know, one way to put it is that she used to delegate, and in this one she's in the trenches, you know, holding the gun herself. But also that the physical training, the guns training, the accent that she had to achieve, it really was a complete makeover. The great thing was that I think we started it with that familiarity that you only get from being, you know, standing around in the mud in Croatia for a few weeks.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So we already knew how to get on each other's nerves, so we got ahead of the game there, which was great.
Yeah.
That was really good.
It took a while for it to irritate everybody else, but I came in with a kind of chip on my shoulder right off the bat.
In summation, it was brilliant.
Great, well, let's hear it for